Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 53 of the J-Situation Podcast. I'm recording this on March 9th, 2021. Man, today has been literally insane. I have this really big project I'm working on at work. Oh, man, it's very demanding. It's one of those types of things. I worked so fervently today that I may have missed a meal. It was like one of those type of things. I don't remember. But I do know it's not over yet. And that this week is going to be one of those weeks, man. I can feel it. Obviously, it's Tuesday, so it's already happening. But it's okay. You know, how can we enjoy the fruits if we don't plant the seeds? Or something. Like, I don't know. I don't even know if that's a saying. But that's what it's feeling like right now. I don't know. It was funny, actually. In the midst of, well, actually, toward the end of the day, I had a client email me, you know, actually, one of the guys I involved with this project. And, you know, it was after I figured out, I spent all day doing something that I didn't think I was going to have to do. It was one of those things where you have a lot of stuff to do in the day, and then one little thing happens in the very beginning of the day that you have to, and it's a problem you have to solve, and it takes you the entire day to do it. It was one of those things. And I figured it out at the very end of the day. You know, I figured it out. I let them know, you know, email the client, say, hey, looks like this is going to work, da, da, da. And he emailed me back. He said, you the man. And when I read that email at the end of the day, and it was that little bit of praise, that little bit of feedback that just, it took my day from like, this day was terrible to, man, that's good. It was like, it was just weird. It was just that little bit of positivity. And it actually resulted in me having the energy to do this podcast right now. Because I was, honestly, I thought about not doing it today. I was so spent. But that email, man, I don't know what it was. Just his genuine, like, and I can't talk about the project I'm working on, but it's a very big project. And there's a lot of moving pieces. It's gigantic, and he is juggling a lot of different stuff. So he knows, like, I know that he's under a lot of pressure. He knows that I'm under a lot of pressure. It's one of those things where like something little goes right, and you could see, like, when you read an email, when you read someone's writing, it doesn't even have to be said, but if you read writing of someone that like excited about something being okay, you know, like what it is, like, you know, like what his sentiment is, and you're just like, sweet, like this is going better right now. Even though it was like a disaster the entire day, it's like that one bit, it's like a resolution, I guess I could call it. So I don't know, just very motivating for me personally, to have a positivity at the end of a tunnel like that. So work sucks. Like, how long do I have to work? Can I just like shoot silencers or something? Oh, wait, that's work too. That's right. That's my second job. No. Oh, why is that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because as always, the J Situation Podcast is brought to you by Pew Science. I can't even say it with a straight face anymore. I own a company that sponsors the podcast that I do. What's wrong with me at this point? Pushing the silencer industry forward one test at a time. Oh, I'm crying. I'm literally crying right now. Tears. Visit pewscience.com for the suppression rating, the simplest and the most accurate hearing safe ratings for your suppressed small arms. I tell you what, they are the simplest and the most accurate hearing safe ratings for your suppressed small arms. I wouldn't be saying it if it wasn't true. The suppression rating is in section 5 of the silencer sound standard, okay? The standard walks you through gunshot noise. It's sort of like Wikipedia. It's pretty in-depth, but it's super fun because it's about guns. I promise. You're going to learn something if you look at it, you know, or at least you'll laugh at the very least. There's little Easter eggs in there to make you laugh. I didn't write it completely for the nerds. There are 7 parts to the standard. They're all on pewscience.com for you to read. If you haven't seen it yet, it's totally fine. Like, you really, you know, you don't have to read it all. You can skip directly to the suppression rating in section 5. That lets you know how silencers stack up in comparison to one another with regard to the sound of the muzzle and at the shooter's ear, okay? And it gives you a hearing safe dose limit for the particular platforms on which the silencers are tested. You're not going to find this information anywhere else in the world, so I urge you to check it out if you haven't. The sixth section, like, you know, after the fifth, you know, you look at the suppression rating explanation, how that works. In the next section of the standard, that's all the reviews. So, like, that's all the silencer reviews that are published, that are public there. You can go peruse those if you want. And, you know, if those are too much for you, if there's too much information in there for you and it's overwhelming, which, you know, it could be the case the first time you look at them, there's a lot of stuff in there, you can always just go straight to section 7. That's the ranking section. There's a simple table. And it uses the suppression rating, the composite rating for all the silencers, and the muzzle and ear ratings, and you can sort. You can sort by suppression rating so you know what is the quietest wear, and also you can sort by the manufacturer, the silencer, and the weapon system, and the ammunition. So you can just look at all that. And you know, I think it's pretty user-friendly. We've received some pretty good feedback about that. So that's there for you. It's a database tool, and you know, if you see something you like there in the table, you know, let's say you sort by what you want to sort through, and then you see something you like, you click on the link there. There's a link on each line of the table for the sound signature review the data comes from. So you click on that link, and then you can read as much as you want. You can go wild. Okay. And as always, if you are a manufacturer and you would like to use PewScience for private testing and consulting services, there is a form on the website with which you can submit that inquiry. Your contact information and any test data that we generate as part of a contracted effort together, that data will be held in strict confidence unless, of course, you want to release it to the public, which, hey, that's your decision, and PewScience can help you do that if you like. We have done that several times. You will see those on PewScience.com. Actually, one of those contracted test programs is a test from one of those programs I'll talk about today. And then the topics we're going to get to. So you'll see another one of those. It does happen from time to time that we release private contract data. And that is for the good of the consumer, and it helps the manufacturer get the word out about their product. It's a win-win. You know what I mean, Jelly Bean? Okay. You can support this podcast, PewScience, and our testing by joining with a membership at PewScience.com. And you can give the podcast a good rating if you want. That doesn't cost you anything. And, you can spread the word. That's free, too. You know, and you don't need to join if you don't want to, but joining at the website does help us keep doing this. It is funded by members. This is a public effort. Okay. Four topics for you today. I've got four topics prepared, kind of to dig in. First topic, some major thanks to PewScience supporters. I'll want to thank some specific folks on this. We'll talk about that. Second topic, Sound Signature Review 637, the CGS Hyperion on 6.5 Creedmoor. This is the results discussion. After every review, the following podcast, I typically discuss the results to clarify anything for folks. And I know that some folks like to hear me talk about it instead of read, and that's great. And some folks just use it as a supplement, and some folks just like to hear my voice. Thank you. Topic three, upcoming testing. Weather sucks, but it will happen. Just want to let you know about that. And then topic four, as always, I would just like to thank our new PewScience members that have joined since I've last spoken with you. Thank you so much for your support. Okay, let's go get into topic one at a time of 9 minutes and 12 seconds. Okay, so this is a very important topic, a very pertinent topic, and something that I'm actually thrilled to be able to discuss with you. Some major thanks to PewScience supporters, the firearm blog, some industry veterans and consumers. Oh my goodness gracious, I tell you what. I got the neatest surprise on Saturday, guys. Pete from the firearm blog, in his Silencer Saturday publication, he wrote some really nice things about PewScience. It was very nice. Pete, he's a really nice guy. I tell you what, man. And he's been in the silencer game for a long time. And he is a true enthusiast. He's a true gun guy. And he's a true silencer guy, most importantly here. You know what I mean? And when I first let folks know I was going to launch Pew Science and I was going to launch the Silencer Sound Standard about a year ago now, I actually had a phone call with Pete to tell him about what I was doing. And we had never spoken before. I was introduced to him by someone in the industry, and I'm really thankful for that. When I first spoke with Pete, he thought it was cool. He did. I do think he was pretty skeptical, because many have tried to measure silencers in the past and have failed in producing meaningful data. You know, eventually Pete did actually join Pew Science. That was a few months back, several months back, I think Pete joined as a member to the cooperative, and I'm very happy that he joined. That was a big honor. I mean, for someone like Pete to join Pew Science, that's like, to me, that's huge, because he's a big deal. I think in the gun media community, and actually as a true gun guy, like as a true silencer guy, him joining Pew Science is, to me personally, a huge deal. And so I've thanked you before, Pete. So if you're listening, thank you again. But anyway, since he joined, he's been paying attention to what I've been publishing, because the article that he wrote at the Firearm Blog, this most recent Silencer Saturday article, and I'll go ahead and link this in the show notes. I'll go ahead and link the article so you guys can go check it out. I'm not the only thing, you know, Pew Science is not the only thing in the article, but it is a major part of it, which I thought was cool. Because that article he wrote, it highlights Pew Science data. It highlights where to get it and why it's important for consumers. And I really appreciated that, and I mean that sincerely. It's a big deal. So, Pete, if you're listening, thank you, sir. Excuse me. I have been invited to do his podcast. I think the Firearm Blog has a podcast. I, to be honest with you, I haven't listened to it. I just haven't. Not because I haven't wanted to, but I don't know, man. Like, I just haven't yet, but I'm sure it's nice. When I do that podcast, I told him I would do it. We've been trying to do it for quite some time. We just haven't been able to. When I do that, I will let you folks know, and perhaps you folks will want to listen. You never know. You know what I mean? It could be good. Could be great. Look forward to meeting Pete. Only known him from afar for about a year now. So I'm looking forward to getting to know him more. Some other people I would like to thank for some recent support are some really old school industry veterans. They know who they are, so there's no reason to mention their names, because some of them probably don't even want to be in the spotlight, which I totally understand. I'm not going to sit here and name drop to make myself look good. Okay, that's not what I'm doing. I'm trying to thank people. When I first started Pew Science and came up with a standard, I really didn't know how the old guard was going to take it. And before me, there have been significant efforts put forth by three people that I can name that were involved with silencer testing in the past: Al Paulson, John Titsworth, and Robert Silvers. I guess, you know, Phil Dater probably deserves mention too. I just, because of my age and my experience, I am most familiar with Al Paulson, John Titsworth, and Robert Silvers with regard to their testing efforts. I know Phil Dater has tested things too, and I've read the stuff and I've seen the stuff. I guess I should mention him too. So four. I know they all contributed to the state of practice these other guys contribute to the state of practice of independent silencer measurement. you know, just independent of companies, at least at first, maybe day or two, at least at first being independent. That's a key here. And in their own way, they all contributed in their own way. You know, they all did something, in my opinion, special in their own way for the community on their own, which is, you know, each one of these people, you know, Al and John and Robert, they exhibited extremely hard work independently. And it's, and I believe that is something they have in common with me. All three of those guys were, or, and are gun guys, true silencer enthusiasts. They were on a quest to produce meaningful test data and meaningful silencer data in general for the consumer. They selfless in some ways for that. So when I first started Pew Science, several very experienced folks in the industry immediately thought of those three guys. Some of them, some of these experienced folks, they compared me to some of these other guys for different reasons. You know, some negative things they compared me about with them about, and some positive things. You know, so, you know, but regardless, the comparisons were immediately made mentally and in some circles, because this is a close-knit industry and frankly, everybody knows everybody. Okay. But nobody knew me. Like, who's Jay? Like, who's this guy? Right? So, it's fine. Well, I'm here to tell you, the old guard that I have recently spoken with, the veterans that continue to watch this industry that have not gone away, they're here. They're just don't, you just don't see them. They know me now. Promise you that. And so there are still a lot of people who do not trust Pew Science because they don't trust me. Because they don't know me, I think. And that's okay. That is totally okay. I think they will come around eventually. I think all I have to do is keep doing what I'm doing. And yeah, it's honestly the only thing I know is the right thing to do. But it, so here we are. Like, that's, I am going to continue what I'm doing. Now, I just want to say, so thank you for the kind words of encouragement lately. And you know, thank you to those who came before me. I do actually, you know what I want to do right now? I didn't even plan on saying this, but I'm going to do it. If you go to pewscience.com, I'm going to go there right now because I don't want to butcher what I wrote. And you go to the Silencer Sound Standard and you click on Silencer Sound Standard Section 1 main page. There's a sentence there I wrote. And that, I want you to know there's a reason I wrote this sentence and who I was talking about when I wrote it. If you look at like the third paragraph, when I kind of say who I am, why I'm doing this, I wrote something and I say, to be clear, the decades of effort of those in the acoustics and blast community, private, public, and academic, are to be lauded and recognized. When I wrote that sentence over a year ago, and massaged it and wrote it and thought about it before I published the standard, I was thinking of Al and John and Robert with regard to the consumer gun industry. And I was also speaking about academia and people I've worked with throughout the years and the pioneers that put forth methodology for the interpretation of waveform analysis and different mechanics and transient analysis and things like that, and the acoustics community and the people at ARL that worked on the hearing models. I mean, that sentence, I know it was short, but the people who understand what I'm doing and are responsible for it being able to occur understand what that sentence is for. So I just want to know, I mean, I just want you to know I'm very purposeful in my writing. and I'm not flippant. So when you hear me say something, or when you hear me write something, I thought about it. All right. I just want to say that. It's important. So, you know, when I get these calls from folks in the industry, you know, that I couldn't dream that they would call me, frankly, it's weird. And they say to me, wow, you're certainly stirring things up. Keep going. When they say things like keep going to me, that's eye-opening and it's motivating, you know, and it's not eye-opening because I don't know I'm stirring things up. Trust me. But it's eye-opening because they're noticing and they tell me that things are apparently happening that the public does not see. So thank you all for your advice and your mentorship. And you know who you are. I am extremely lucky to have you in my corner. And I appreciate you believing in me. The third major party that I would like to thank is consumers. I'm not just speaking about Pew Science members, trust me. I'm speaking about all the consumers that continue to go to bat for Pew Science in all situations, on all platforms, and in all manners. You folks, you see the objective Pew Science data that's out there. You see the objective data that I'm putting out. You see what I'm analyzing. You see what I'm saying about things objectively. And by this point, you know me, man. You listen to me talk. This is episode 53 of this podcast. That's days of audio, guys. Like, each of my podcasts are at least an hour long. Some are two. 53 episodes. And most of them are just me talking because, like, we had the COVID thing. And frankly, I just wanted to keep going with this. And I have a lot of stuff to cover. And right now, I have guests coming. I have guest requests coming out of my ears that want to be on this podcast. Frankly, I don't have time right now for them. This is for Pew Science right now. And they understand. Okay, and I mean, there's no other way to say that. So, you've heard me talk for 53 episodes. So you know me, man. Like, this is, I talk, and this is how I talk. Like, I'm not putting on a show here. And, well, I am, but you know what I mean. So you know where my heart is in this, and I'm all in. I'm all in. So if you don't know that by now, man, hey, stick around and watch, as you are amazed by the autistic rants that often ensue on this podcast. Like, something is wrong with my brain. That's fine. It's not healthy. But here we are. And you know what? You know what happened on ARFCOM this weekend? AR15.com? Not only did a guy thank me for the data in public, but he told everyone that Pew Science data is going to be so mainstream to hop on board now, and he bet a case of ammo on it. Dude, that's in writing on ARFCOM right now. Like, I put that in my freaking Instagram story when I saw it. I was like, what? Like, that's huge, guys. Like, I don't, and some of you might be like, oh, that's a gun form. That's cute. I'm like, okay. You, why don't you go to ARFCOM and create something like this? Let me know how that works out for you. ARFCOM is like walking into the Thunderdome, dude. When, like, it's not two men enter, one man leave. It's you enter and, like, a gang of 100 enter, and then they beat you to death. That's what ARFCOM is. Trust me. So that was cool. And you know what's crazy? And I went back to the forum. I had a DM. I don't really get a lot of messages on ARFCOM, so I barely post. And I was like, huh, uh-oh. Whenever I see a DM on ARFCOM, I'm like, uh-oh, what did I do? So I clicked the thing, and a guy DM me. He's like, hey, he bought me a forum membership thing. I don't even know what it's called. Bronze member, I don't know. I haven't looked into it that deeply yet, but what? He like purchased something for me. I don't even know what it does. I think maybe it lets me, I don't think, I think maybe it lets me communicate with members more, or I'm not sure. I need to read about it. I don't know what the ARFCON membership does. I know it supports their website. I just don't know what it does for me. I think it might have some benefits. I'm not sure. He told me it was his birthday. And he told me, hey man, it's my birthday, and I try to do something nice for other people on this day, and so I bought you this. I love what you're doing. Thanks for doing it. So here's a membership for you. It's like, what? So that's exactly the type of person I hope would follow and be engaged with Pew Science. I'm doing this to help all of you. I do want you to know that. That dude, he seems to have a lot in common with me, and I don't even know him. And you know why I know that? Because that is like something I would do. So I think when you put this energy out there, I think the energy finds you. I think the other people that act like this find you. I think when you're kind to others, kind people find you. I think people are kind to you when you're kind to them. I think that's I don't know. There's this like really, this guy, like old school, like back in the day, something about the golden rule. I don't know. He's kind of famous. I heard he's a pretty nice guy. I think a lot of people worshiped him. I don't know. Whatever. Turns out the golden rule is probably pretty good. Anyway. So if you're listening, sir, Mr. ARFCON man, thank you. I do appreciate your generosity. I'll pay you back somehow. Finally, I did want to thank someone individually again. There's this FFL from out of state, and this dude has terminal cancer. And I was lifting weights at the gym on Sunday, and he messaged me, and he asked me what he could do for me and how he could help me because he believes in what I'm doing. Like, we got to talking, and then he's like, yeah, I'm not. Don't have that long because of this and that. I got a little choked up. I have to be honest with you. I'm sitting there like, I'm doing something for consumers, and this guy wants to help me. And like, he has cancer. It's like, what? It was heavy, dude. It was one of those things where I was like, man, come on. I can't do this right now. I was like, this guy's so sweet. And I was like, man. That was awesome. And so there, I got consumers on forums that are random. I got dealers reaching out to me. I got industry veterans reaching out to me, giving me encouragement. I got Pew Science members donating. I got Google search traffic getting crazy. I got all this support, and it is just really nice. So as we come up on the 1 year anniversary of the Silencer Sound Standard on the 26th of this month, I want you guys to keep in mind that all of you listening are making this happen. And I will continue to thank you because your support is continuing, and I see it every day. You rock. You really do. Okay. Topic two at a time of 29 minutes and 2 seconds. Okay, topic two. Oh my God. Yeah. Sound Signature Review 637. The CGS Hyperion on 6.5 Creedmoor bolt action results discussion. I want to discuss these with you. Let me get a drink of water. 1 second here. Oh, excuse me. Man, this was a doozy. This review. Wasn't this not a doozy? Is that a good adjective? Or a, wait, would that be a noun? Yeah, it would be. This was it? Is it? Yeah, it's a noun. Weird. Synonym for being a strange thing, I guess, or an impactful event would be a doozy. Yeah. Well, it was. What in tarnation? What in tarnation is a Hyperion? No, seriously. CGS Hyperion, a 22-inch bolt action. 6.5 Creedmoor. 6.5 Creedmoor. It's basically a 308 neck down to 6.5, right? Essentially, look, I'm not a reloader, right? What do I look like, an ammunition manufacturer now? I'm not. But it's pretty much that, right? So it's probably more complicated than that, but it's pretty similar. I know it uses the same dang case because it's like fits on the bolts and stuff. Yeah, it's basically what it is. Okay, so this was, by the way, this was a contracted test for CGS. I performed a test program for them, and this was one of the tests they requested I do for R&D. And so after a while, I was asked to publish the data, and so I did for you. Actually, I decided. I told them I was going to do it. I mean, they wanted me to do it, but I was like, I want to do it today. And they were like, all right. I was like, all right. Because, you know, I wanted to fit it into the schedule. So let's address the elephant in the room. I want to address the elephant in the room right off the bat. I want you to go to the rankings page. The rankings page on pewscience.com. That is pewscience.com/rankings. Okay, super easy. You can get there just by typing that in your address bar, or you can Google it, or you can even click on the rankings on the menu there on the website. Excuse me. Now, once you're there, Okay, good. Scroll down past the forest, past the trees, you'll see the suppression rating chart. Super recognizable. It's the only thing with all those colors on the website. And you'll get to this, the Pew Science suppression rating table. It's a table. Scroll all the way. And then you got all your reviews there all in one place for you with suppression ratings. Okay, now, what I want you to do is I want you to click. I'm doing this right now along with you. I want you to click on the ear suppression rating for the shooter, that title bar. Click on there once, and what it should do, it'll show a little arrow there pointing down. That means that it is sorting descending, meaning that it sorted all the data in the table with the suppression rating at the ear with the highest one for the quietest silencer at the ear on the very top, and at the bottom of the table, it would be the loudest silencer at the ear down at the very bottom. On the particular platform with the ammunition it was tested with. Okay. So, you do that. Now you can see the first three entries on the table at the top there. Those are all 22 long rifle subsonic. See that? Okay. So what's the fourth entry? That's this test. That's the CGS Hyperion 6.5 from a 22-inch barrel at the ear. See that? The sound signature at the ear when you shoot this setup is just a little bit louder than shooting a rugged Oculus with random 22 subsonic ammo through a Beretta 21 pistol. You feel me? Is that a little crazy? You know those little Beretta 21A pistols that they're offering threaded right now from the factory that everyone and their mom's buying? You've seen them on social media. You know, the blued ones have the wood, the dark wood grips, and then you have the desert tan, the tan ones. You know what I mean? But they're both threaded from the factory. You know those? That's like that gun. I mean, the one I shot it on, it wasn't my gun, but it was one that someone had, and it was threaded. You know, I did want one of the factory guns. The factory threaded guns, until I saw people, they were showing me photos of the barrel not being threaded concentrically to the bore from the factory. So, like, this, I was like, oh, I'm going to skip that until I know it's okay. I'm not going to be an early adopter on that. But yeah, you know what that pistol is. It's the Beretta 21. It's a small, it's super short barrel. Okay. Super tiny barrel. If you have ever shot one with a silencer, you know it's not the quietest 22 pistol. But it's 22, so it's not that bad with a full-size 22 silencer on it, okay? Right? And you saw that, okay? in my review. Well, at the ear, with a rugged Oculus in the full configuration, that's about 1 point quieter than the Hyperion is at the ear with a 22-inch supersonic 6.5 Creedmoor bolt-action rifle. So let that sink in for a second. I'm going to wait. Let's let it sink in. Okay. It's planted its roots in your brain. Now, you may be asking yourself, Jay, how can that be real? How in the world can that be the same level of loudness? There's a supersonic crack from the supersonic bullet in 6.5 and the 22 is subsonic. We know that supersonic cracks are loud. Yeah. Supersonic crack is loud. But we're measuring the sound signature 6 inches right of the shooter's right ear. And at that location, the overall objective loudness, the amplitude, frequency, duration, tone, energy imparted to your inner ear is about the same as if you fired that little suppressed 22 pistol with a pretty dang good 22 silencer on it. This is why the suppression rating is the most powerful metric ever developed for silencer sound in the history of the world ever by anyone. Now you see the power of the suppression rating if you haven't already. Okay, now let's look more at the review. Okay, man, so I'm going to click on the review here. And look, I don't mean to sound like I'm tooting my own horn here and bragging, but when have you ever been able to do this with a rating system for a silencer that was correct? Ever. Ever. You can't do it with Peak DB, remember? You know this, you can't. So, okay. Okay, so to the review. Now, first of all, the silencer was shot on a Super Gucci gun, guys. Like, Super Gucci. I like this adjective Gucci when I use it correctly. Now, why, you may ask, was such a Gucci gun used? I'm going to stop saying that now. Why, you may ask, why did we use this very expensive rifle? Well, because this was a contracted test. It was private contract, like I said, for CGS, and it was an internal R&D test, and you know, they released it to you. And for that contract, they had stipulated the use of a 22-inch bolt action, and they sent the rifle with the silencer. So, you know, this is, hey, they sent the rifle. And they're like, here's your rifle. I'm like, all right, I guess we're using this. And we did. It was very nice rifle. It was kind of heavy, but it's not really a hunting rifle. It's more of a kill-everyone rifle. It's pretty nice. Nice trigger. Now, on this host, and this is a little cray-cray, as the kids say, you're getting 138.9 dB at the muzzle via PewSoft, so you know that's right. And then, you know, but it tells you nothing because it's just one number. So Peak DB average, you're like, okay. By this time, you listen to PewScience and you look at PewScience.com, you know that peak decibel, that's cute, but the suppression rate is what matters. Now you look at the impulse. Your eyes are gonna be like, what? Very low, 116.5 decibel millisecond. I was like, that's kind of low impulse. So those of you who have been looking at impulse numbers, you'll see that's pretty dang low for the muzzle. Now, the Pew Science members out there, you guys are seeing the metrics at the ear too, and those metrics are wild. Take a look at the average peak impulse at the shooter's ear if you're a member. Wild. That's wild. Okay. So, now further down in the review, if you keep going down the review on the website there, you're going to see that early time first shot graphic I've been doing down in figure one. Been doing that in every 308 and supersonic rifle test. And the same thing for the 6.5 test. I did the same thing. I did almost the exact same graphic I did for the test. Because, you know, this is the second time I've tested the Hyperion shown you Hyperion data on supersonic rifle. So I tried to mimic the same plot that I did for 308 as I did for on 6.5. And I found the same landmark events in the waveform there. You can see them. It's pretty cool, right? Just as, it's almost as if the data's real. It's almost as if the data's real and you can tell and it can't be faked because this is the silencer's fingerprint in sound space. In pressure time space, this is the Hyperion fingerprint and you can put it on a 308. You can put it on a 6.5 with a longer barrel. Guess what? Fingerprint. Is it going to change shape? A little. Is it going to change amplitude? A little. Is it going to look similar? You bet your butt it is. You can't fake it. Not possible. Because if you try, I will know. And why will I know? Because I have PewSoft. And I record full waveforms. And that's why we do it. One of the reasons. Okay. Now, this graph, and I know it's complicated, and you don't even have to look at it if you don't want to. But if you do want to, it's there. And what it shows is a lot of stuff. It's going to show you the sound of the firing pin dropping and then hitting the primer. It's going to show you the sound of the bullet traveling through the gun before it even gets to the silencer. It's going to show you the bullet entering the silencer, the muzzle blast entering the silencer, the bullet coming out of the silencer. It's going to show you all that in early time. That's what the sound signature is composed of. These are real events happening. This is an event that you're witnessing in pressure space over time. A snapshot in time. And you see it on the x-axis time. That's why I'm showing you dynamic waveforms. So you can understand this is real. These are transients happening very quickly, but they're distinct and important and meaningful. So I first talked about this when I first reviewed the Hyperion on 308. But the Hyperion does something that no other rifle silencer does. And it does it in a way that no other rifle silencer does it quite like the Hyperion does. The Hyperion lets the bullet out, and you get a big pulse, and then everything gets quiet all of a sudden. Real quiet. Nothing comes out for a brief period of time. In fact, the signature drops to around 120 dB. True, raw 120 dB for a really short period of time. And then the gas starts to jet. This all happens very quickly. This is happening at probably around half a millisecond. But it's happening. And the gas starts to jet out of the end cap, and it does jet, but it barely jets. It just hums along. It dumps gas slowly but surely out of the silencer, gradually controlled, you know. And to take a look at how that happens, you can go all the way to, if you scroll down in the review to figure four, there's a figure 4A and a figure 4B. One is just zoomed in and more simple and labeled. You can check out the impulse charts. Impulse is the area under the pressure curve over time. That's all that is. That is the mathematical quantity you are looking at when you look at impulse. It's literally the integral of the pressure time curve. See there? And that's another reason why you can tell our pressure curves are right, because the impulse looks normal. Just another tidbit for you. It's another reason why the data integrity can be verified. And that's why you don't see a lot of people saying it's wrong, because they literally can't, because it looks correct, because it is. You can't fake this stuff, guys. I've been in this game 15 years. I've been doing this. It seems like I'm trying to convince you of something, I'm not. I'm trying to convince some other people. Okay. Now, the impulse is dependent upon pressure over time, right? And it's dependent upon time, because it's the area under a dynamic event curve. So, therefore, the impulse changes over time too. And that's why you see a change. And we've talked about that many times, about how that talks about momentum transfer potential. What it does, what that really means is, impulse is kind of, you can think about it like this. Think about it like the potential of the air molecules moving to induce momentum onto things they touch, like your eardrum. Okay, that's the that's momentum transfer potential, really, when you think about it. Impulse of a pressure waveform measured in the air, in the free field. That's what impulse would be. Okay. So, does the silencer have first-round pop? Yes, every silencer has first-round pop. Every silencer ever invented. You can't hide from it. You can't hide from PewSoft. Can't hide it from PewScience. It's impossible. It's impossible to hide it in impulse space. Truly. It's clever, right? It's clever the way I developed this knowing that it would show us everything so that you wouldn't be able to cheat. And yeah, that's what it does. Now, the first round pop of the Hyperion with supersonic ammo in general is extremely low. It's actually, oftentimes it's imperceptible to the human ear. It's really not there. For all intents and purposes, it's not there. And that's all you need to know, really, about that, frankly. I think if I had more time today, I'd delve into that. But you guys can read it. I wrote that in the review. There's a technical nitty-gritty in there if you want. First round pop, it isn't a thing to be concerned about with a silencer, guys. It really isn't. And I tell you what, the Thunderbeast Ultra 9, it does it pretty well, too, I tell you what. It's just the Hyperion is way quieter than the Ultra 9. Despite being within like 1 dB average of it at the muzzle. So for the 100th time, this is why peak decibel doesn't matter that much. The Hyperion will walk the Ultra 9 like a Corvette will a Mustang. Trust me. And if you're a Mustang guy, I'm sorry. Corvettes are faster. That is what it is. And look, relax. I drive a F-250 too. I'm unbiased. Look, I'm unbiased about silencers and cars. I just want the best of everything as a consumer. Okay, that's... You can go... And you know what? If you think I'm... Oh, CGS, go call CGS. You ask them if that's true. They know I use other silencers. I'll use other silencers too, my personal stuff. Don't try to think that... You know, if there's anyone who's unbiased... I mean, I'm almost unbiased to a fault because I have to be. You understand? So, okay. Now back to cars though, you know, speaking of cars, look, I'm probably going to get a Tesla eventually. Mostly because of Elon Musk, not because of the car. It is super fast, but Musk is awesome and I like his style. Okay. So members though, I do want to, tell the PewScience members right now, if you haven't yet, go look at the impulse waveforms measured at the shooter's ear in this review. The impulse waveform specifically. Yeah, the pressure, I know the pressure's low too. But look at the impulse waveforms. I just want you to look at that and look at the vertical axis and look at the single digit numbers and be like, what is that? Because, you know, it's funny. The members get to see how the impulse happens before the gas leaves the weapon. And they can see here that the gas leaving the weapon has more impulse than the gas, the impulse before the gas leaves the weapon has more impulse than the gas leaving the weapon. So it's like, oh. What is that? 27.5, hold on a second, 27.5 milliseconds. Yeah, you can see that. You know, it's really interesting. If you ever have this is for everyone, not only PewScience members, but if you ever want to know what is causing an impulse spike in impulse space, a quick way to check it out is look at the timestamp. So if you look at a peak, let's say the peak is 27.5 milliseconds of impulse accumulation on an impulse chart, scroll up to the pressure chart that's usually right above it and find that time, and you'll see what pressure spike corresponded to the impulse accumulation. See, if you understand that the impulse is the area under the pressure curve, then you can see, oh, I have a spike here. Where did that in impulse energy? There's more momentum being transferred here. Why is that? Oh, it's because there was a gas jet happening in XYZ. Or because there was a sound signature happening in XYZ. So there was a sound pressure happening Maybe it wasn't a gas jet. Maybe it was, I don't know, a freaking explosion happening in the chamber and then something coming down the barrel. Like in the like in this test where we shot the rifle, you see at 27 milliseconds at the shooter's ear, there's this pressure spike. You're like, what is that? Well, clearly nothing's coming out of the gun yet. So it's definitely not out of the silencer. And then you go down an impulse space and you see there's a huge hump. And then later in time, there's no more huge humps. And you're like, well, how come this, the gas coming out of the silencer wasn't loud to the shooter's ear like the gun shooting was? Oh, it's because it has a Hyperion on it. And the Hyperion is a sound black hole. That's why. This is why I can speak so confidently about the sound signature. I don't even have to hear this silencer. All I have to do is I could put triple hearing protection on and shoot the silencer, or I could just gut out my eardrums with a corkscrew and shoot the silencer, measure it with PewSoft and tell you it was quiet, because that's what the suppression rating does and that's what the impulse waveforms are telling you, okay? And that's why it's so important. This is why I'm so confident in this, because the waveforms are showing us why we hear what we hear. Cannot fake them. I guess you could draw in Microsoft Paint, but dang, that would take a long time. And how would you know how to do it? I don't know if I could keep my hand steady. Have you ever seen ear waveforms like that? No. What in the world? What in tarnation? It's like, where's the sound? Where is it? Where'd it go? Where is the sound of the ear? Where'd it go? Oh, that's right. It's in the Hyperion. That's where it is. It's alien technology, man. It's a gravity reactor in there. Joe Rogan. Get me on your podcast to talk about this. Aliens. I'm telling you. No. In reality, the reason for this happening is because the coaxial chamber is allowing flow to get trapped extremely efficiently and not trip over itself. It's allowing gas not to stack is what's happening. And it's doing that in a tricky, tricky way. It's tricky. It's doing something special sauce-like. It's awesome. But the easier thing to say is it's aliens. And that's why I say aliens, because it's so aliens. It's like way easier for me to explain that than gas dynamics. So I'm like, it's aliens. So here's the thing that sucks. Here's the thing that sucks about this review. Not that sucks about the Hyperion, but what sucks about this the review I did, or the test that we did. I wish the dang thing would have been on a 20-inch 6.5 Creedmoor instead of a 22-inch. So we could have apples-to-apples barrel length comparison with 308 data. That's why I want that. But alas, we do not. We don't have it. Also, the 20-inch bolt-action 308 tested with the Hyperion needed to use the muzzle adapter due to the silencer thread, the shoulder on the threading there of the silencer. I had a pre-production unit, or rather I do, and so the host barrel didn't have adequate OD. You know, just one of those things sucked. So, we had to use the muzzle adapter for that. So that was the reason for the muzzle adapter. Now, besides 308 versus 6.5, there are two other differences in the tests that we did, right? Then the 308 test versus this test, muzzle adapter and barrel length. So what's the worst thing that can happen when you try to compare the influence of one variable? It's when you introduce two more variables, right? So that's the only thing that sucks about this review. I mean, the data is still awesome, and it was a great test, and the performance is real. It doesn't give us the answer about 308 versus 6.5. Now, what I did is I plotted the suppression rating differences from the two tests in the review there in Figure 7. So you could get a feel for that, and then I plotted the unsuppressed waveforms together below that. In Figure 8 and 9. So, the Hyperion was quieter on 6.5 than 308, but also the barrel was longer. So if you look at the unsuppressed waveforms in pressure and impulse space, they're side by side, and there's a comparison of both tests. You can see that there's less combustion energy measured with the unsuppressed 6.5. I do believe, like I said in the review, I do believe that is primarily due to barrel length. You know, when you have a 22-inch barrel, you have over a 20-inch barrel, you have 2 more inches for gas to be pushing this bullet. So that's where you get your velocity increase, right? Because the longer amount of time you can push the gas, I'm sorry, push the bullet, the more momentum you can impart upon it. The more momentum you can impart to an object, the more energy you can dump into it, and the faster you can get it going. That's why longer barrels make faster things. But in doing so, the pressure drops further for a given powder charge, so you get less combustion energy exiting the barrel. You get lower combustion, you get lower pressure of combustion product out of the barrel. It's a better way to say that. I lost my train of thought. Oh, right. So yeah. So you get lower combustion pressure. So you get lower pressure and impulse. And you can see that in figure 8 and 9. It's pretty clear. 2 inches. So that's what you see. So now we know what barrel length did. We're like, okay, that's why that's like that. I mean, the shape of the curves are very similar. Why would the shape of the curves be so similar in pressure and impulse space? Why would that be? Well, the 308 case and the 6.5 case are very similar in size, and the powder charge is probably pretty similar. So the time domain in which everything is occurring is pretty similar. So, you know, you should get the same, similar decays to, we're measuring at the same distance, 1 meter left of the muzzle. That's how, I don't know, this is how accurate pew science testing is, man. It's like we eliminate variables. So there you go. That's true comparison right there for you. You're probably never going to see something like that anywhere else. In fact, you probably never have. In fact, that is probably, I would venture to guess. I mean, all of my graphs are unique to the world, but figure 8 and figure 9, the comparison of 308 and 6.5, 1 meter left of the muzzle, unsuppressed, out of 20-inch barrel and 22-inch barrel, this is the first time you've ever seen that before. I just realized that. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. That's why I'm pausing, because it's funny. What's really cool about it? When you look at the impulse graph in figure 9, how they track on top of each other, like perfect though. Perfect. Until about, 520 pascals or so, or pascal milliseconds of impulse. So until about 29.6 milliseconds, which is about halfway down the decay curve of the pressure pulse. Interesting. So like early time, the rate of impulse accumulation is extremely similar. Why is that? Why would that be? Let's talk about this for a second. Why would it be that the rate of impulse accumulation early time would be similar from 308 to 6.5 Creedmoor? It's because the initial explosion coming out of the barrel is very similar. The initial jetting is very similar. But then a little bit later in time, there's some decay from the longer barrel charge. That's why. That's cool. Anyway, I just like actually thought about that for the first time just now, the way the curve is shaped. So I just kind of got distracted. Okay, let me get back to this. Oh, right. So that's the barrel length influence. Now, let's look at that other variable, the muzzle adapter. So what did that do? Well, it's kind of hard to say. I think I know, but I'm not 100% on it. This is something I'm still researching. CGS and I are still looking at this. This is some R&D stuff. I think they're pretty confident they know. I'm harder to convince. But that's because they know more about their sponsor than I do, probably. I tried to show something that would highlight what the muzzle adapter does. Take a look at figure 10 and 11 in the review. Now, it shows shot one with 308 and 65. That's first round pop, right? Shot one, that's FRP. Those are FRP waveforms. And then on the other graph, I show shot two of 308 and 65. Cool. Okay. The peaks of the curves are really similar. Like they're super close, right? Super close. But the time is different, which is wild. Black is 308, red is 65. Notice how the red curve ramps up faster, but the black curve takes longer. Isn't that weird? That happens in the first round pop, and I plotted shot two just to show you it also happens in shot two. So it wasn't like, oh, their first round pop is just different. That's probably because of the muzzle. No. I wanted to show, hey, this is not just first round pop. This is a phenomenon that is inherent to the gas flow with the two systems that's different. This is not shot dependent. This is system dependent. That's why I showed two graphs and not just one. I'm not even showing pressure because who cares? I'm showing impulse because we can track pressure over time in a way that's easier to understand with impulse accumulation. I mean, I even if you don't really understand the physical meaning of impulse, treat it as energy. It's not, but treat it as energy, and you'll get the same answer to in your head, really. You'll be wrong sometimes, but you'll be close. So, I mean, you can think of it more as a momentum transfer potential, but anyway, my point is the muzzle adapter is delaying gas flow through the silencer somehow, and it's throttling the flow. It's throttling something. So the question is, would the Hyperion be louder on 308 without the muzzle adapter we tested it with way back when? I don't know. But it can't be that much louder, considering it was way quieter on 6.5 with just 2 inches more of barrel. So I wouldn't lose sleep about the muzzle adapter taking performance away from the Hyperion. I mean, it's good. It might make it a little bit louder not using it, but like, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. This silencer is stupid quiet. Okay, guys, it really is. So good job, Josh. You earned this, man. Props. This thing is ridiculous, dude. So in summary, what's my personal opinion about the silencer? This is Jay talking now, okay? With a little bit of knowledge thrown in. It is the quietest supersonic rifle silencer ever made, probably. And it probably won't be beaten easily in the near to midterm. That's my forecast. And when they make it bigger for 338 and 50 cal, which they already have, it's going to be the quietest there too, probably. And if they made it smaller, then it's going to compete there too, and probably be the quietest for a size, probably. So yeah, you watch out, man. Watch out, world. CGS is here. I don't know, and they're apparently not effing around. If I was a silencer manufacturer right now, dude, I might go take a walk just to clear my head. Like I don't even know. Like I'm a consumer. I'm like, what is this? Like the technology is not only quieter, it's quieter while being light, durable, and it has a generous bore too. That means they didn't even cheat or compromise. It's not like they're like, oh, let me just make this bore tight. Let me make this bore super tight to make it quieter. Let me just make the silencer bigger to make it quieter. No, dude. This silencer is the same size as some other silencers, and it's way quieter. This silencer has a bore that is way bigger than some other silencers, and it's way quieter. That means it's dangerous to everyone, I think. It really is, the technology itself. It's dangerous because it's so different and it's disruptive. This is what I would call a disruptive technology, because it's a technology that takes what people had expected from items in the performance arena, and it changes what you expect to occur in a design envelope. Remember when I first talked about the Thunderbeast Ultra 9 and I said they have really squeezed performance out of this design envelope and it's very good? I was correct. And it is a very good silencer. The Thunderbeast Ultra 9 is an excellent full-size rifle silencer, and no one has ever doubted that. It's good for precision rifle shooters. It's good for people that want a quiet silencer. It's 9 inches long. It's a full-size rifle silencer. People put it on bolt guns and they enjoy themselves, frankly. I mean, and it's been there for a long time. Some people may have thought that was the quietest rifle silencer for a long time. It probably was up there as one of the quietest for a long time. Well, now the Hyperion is here. Is it larger diameter than the Thunderbeast Ultra 9? Absolutely. Isn't it lighter though? What, the muzzle adapter for the mount for the Ultra 9 with it? Is it? Didn't I write that in the review? Hold on, let me scroll down. I wrote the conclusion in the subjective opinions. Yeah. If you put a flash hider on a Thunderbeast Ultra 9, then the Hyperion's 1.5 ounces lighter. So, yeah. If you go back to the rankings at the ear, and you look at the at the ear rating, and don't even, forget about 6.5 for a second. Go back to 308. Side by side, the Hyperion is, what is that? Like 5 points quieter at the ear. And way, no, I looked at, no, I looked at the wrong number. Yeah. And then way quieter at the muzzle. Like, what? Like, the bystanders are going to notice it even more than the shooter will. And that's because the Hyperion, that's because the Ultra 9 is so quiet at the ear. So the Hyperion is going to be not only noticeably quieter at the ear, but like at the, like bystanders are going to be like, what? Did someone shoot a gun? So yeah, that's why it's dangerous, I think. It's not just a little quieter. It is a lot quieter, and it's a lot quieter than some quiet silencers. So it's not like, oh, they made a silencer that was a little quieter than some stuff. No, they made a silencer that was quieter than the quietest stuff by enough to notice with the naked ear without you freaking even measuring it. So remember, the suppression rating is the hardest thing to compute, but the easiest thing to verify. You can verify it yourself by shooting the weapons. It's advanced. Taper mount, light, strong, quiet. Throw a vented end cap on this thing if you want. Be weird. If you want to be weird, be weird. Whatever. It won't judge you. It'll take it. So, okay. That's all I have to say about that for now, man. Sounds crazy. All right. Topic 3 at a time of 1 hour. 8 minutes and 48 seconds. Oh, man. Topic 3. Upcoming testing. Man, you know what? The weather sucks right now, but testing will happen. I am frustrated. I have to say I am frustrated. Several things have occurred other than COVID stuff that has delayed an upcoming Pew Science test program, and weather has been a major one, especially because Texas froze over and we had a whole problem. That had knock-on effects that actually took away multiple. I mean, it you know, when something like that happens, not only does it take away the time where you were going to test, it takes the way of time from other stuff that then has to be made up that took priority over testing. You see what I mean? So there's knock-on effects to schedule. So I'm fighting that. I'm fighting that right now. And that's part of, hey, when you write a Gantt chart for your project and you're scheduling things, you have some slop for certain tasks and some things run in parallel, some don't. And, you know, as a project manager, you make do and you allocate resources to get things done. So we're going to get it done, but time is something we can't make more of. So delays happen. I know it is the beginning of March, but I'm seriously raring to go. Like, I am like chomping at the bit. I actually have a lot of sponsors on deck to test. A lot. And so I literally have been, I just been stifled, man, by this weather. But I have been monitoring it. I mean, I am optimistic. It's not looking good for this weekend, but hey, I've been surprised before. You never know. If I do test, you'll know. But if I don't test soon, don't worry. I still have plenty of data to keep showing you, of course. I'm not going to leave you hanging. So it's just that there are some key tests that need to happen ASAP and some contracted tests that need to happen, frankly. So clients are like, so can we get tests? I'm like, bro, if you're listening, I know. I'm trying. I promise. Mother Nature's crazy. Okay, topic 4 at a time of 1 hour. 10 minutes and 59 seconds. Welcome to new Pew Science members, and thank you for your support. I saw some of you join recently, but I have literally been tied up all day, and I have not been able to fire off any emails to you, actually yesterday or today, so I will soon, I promise. Thank you for joining. You guys are awesome. You are part of the reason this keeps going. You are the reason we are able to do public testing, and thank you very much for your generous support. For those of you listening who feel like chipping in, please, by all means, check that out on the website. You can totally do that. But yeah, no pressure, though. But if you do, it would mean the world. And if you don't, hey, it's cool. I'm still your friend. Thank you, everyone, and I will talk to you folks again soon.